Hi, my name is Shani, and welcome to the Experience Designers podcast, where we explore the human experience, what it is, and how we might create better ones for ourselves and for others. In this episode, we talk to Maria Sundell, a medical doctor, neurologist, brain researcher, and podcaster with a passion for mindfulness and how we create conditions for human flourishing. We talk about what a regulated nervous system can mean, and we go deeper into that discomfort of change that we've all felt. What is it really physically in our brains, and how does it present an opportunity for us? And we explore what it means to be able to go with the flow of life and how we can use self-awareness to promote our brain's growth and feel more balanced and content. And we also look deeper into the fact that when we help our brains evolve, we can change the way we experience life. Welcome, Maria.
Thank you.
I am super excited to have you here and for us to have this conversation. We've had a few talks before, and in preparation, I still went and looked at your profile. And actually, just looking at it and seeing, you know, you're a medical doctor, you're a neurologist, you research the brain, and you have a podcast, Brain Observations About the Brain, made me really curious. What is it about the brain that is so fascinating?
I think I've always been fascinated by the brain. Ever since I was a kid, I've always been fascinated by humans, the human experience, psychology, and the brain just, it sits in the middle of everything. It is the center of the body that controls what we do. It's the center of how we think. It's the center of how we experience the world around us. It's the part of the body that takes in all the sensory experiences, the sights and sounds and touch and all of that, and makes something comprehensible out of it. And to me, there is so much possibility in that. There is so much to learn, so much to understand, and so much that you can do with that knowledge. So it's always been a passion of mine to understand the brain. And it feels like it's a job that's never, I don't know if we're ever going to get there because it is so incredibly complex, but just the journey of working on it is just amazing.
Amazing. It is really fascinating. You keep hearing right now, there is a lot of buzz around having a regulated nervous system, for example, in all kinds of areas, not just neurology, even in spirituality, you talk about it. What does that actually mean to you?
I don't know. When people talk about regulating your nervous system, I think it can mean different things. I think maybe one part could be regulating this fight or flight response. If we have a lot of micro stressors, internal stresses where we feel like we're behind, we're running late, we have a lot of things to do, we have conflicts, those things create micro stressors within us that kind of elevate our baseline of arousal, that we feel a little bit on edge. So reducing that and returning to a bit of a more relaxed state, I think that is what some people talk about when they talk about balancing the nervous system. And I think another aspect might be to become more aware of yourself, of your thoughts, and to learn better emotional literacy and better emotion regulation so that you live a life that is less reactive and more intentional. So those are just my interpretation of that, but I think there can probably be a lot of different thoughts and ideas behind that expression.
For sure. Yeah, it's usually like that with definitions, right? Everyone puts something different into the mix. But I know you talk a lot about self-awareness and mindfulness and compassion. So what do you put into it?
Well, I think my interest comes largely from, I believe that we are in the first stages of a shift in how we perceive health and how we pursue health. We've gone from survival to detecting and treating and managing disease to preventing disease. And now we're moving into the next level of human health development, that is human flourishing. And human flourishing is to achieve more than the absence or the reduction of distress. It's going a step beyond that. It's moving into a life that is led with more purpose, with joy, with compassion, with better self-awareness, ability to regulate emotions, ability to live in the flow of the ups and downs of life. There's a whole spectrum of emotions, and it's not about only having positive emotions and removing anything that is negative. It's about learning how to navigate that and live in that. And having this life experience that fulfills you and where you're not only okay, you are actually thriving. I believe that that is the next step. And I want to contribute to that phase. I want to contribute to developing that in society.
I really love that. And I think it's something that we share, but from very different angles in terms of approaching the human experience. So one of the big questions I sit with, and I would love to just go a little bit deeper with you, then you talk here about fulfillment and thriving, kind of moving beyond just the necessities of surviving and into something that is maybe more in evolution in a way. What do you think is, what does it look like, a good human experience? What, more than these words, like what would it look like?
I think what the external expression of it is likely very different between different people. But I think the feeling we get from it is the sense of maybe safety, contentment, excitement, motivation, peace, calm, love, connection, that we feel at ease with life and that we feel loving and loved with people around us. I think that is a joyful, flourishing human experience, and that we feel a sense of progress. We feel a sense of development. I think most people, we enjoy growth. We enjoy personal growth. We enjoy expanding our limits. We enjoy expanding our perspective, learning new things. That's why we do that. That's why we continuously strive to learn things, to build on knowledge, to get somewhere else. And I think when that comes from joy and not from anxiety, that is a very joyful experience.
Mm. I love that. And I'm also thinking, I love what you were saying about being at ease with life, because joy sometimes maybe can feel a little bit unattainable in all moments. How does that mix for you? Because I think sometimes growth and progress can feel quite uncomfortable in a way. So, yeah. But it's still something that we strive for. What's your take? Like, how do you feel at ease in that growth and in that discomfort in the stretch?
Well, I think I would like to approach that from sort of giving a little bit more of a background to how the brain and human experiences function, and to kind of build into that question. So when we're born with a lot of nerve cells, and we're born with so many connections around them, but the connections are not mature. There are just tiny little roads all over the place, but there are no highways, and there are no networks that are securely formed. And this is why tiny babies, they can't do much. They can't really see, they can't really move around, they can't really control their mouth or their arms, or they can't hold up their neck. And then through development, what happens is that we take that big jumble of connections and we start pruning away the ones that we don't need, and we start reinforcing the ones that we do need. So through development, the brain is adapting to your unique experience. And what can be tricky about this is that your brain is changing the most at a time point in life when you're a child and you don't have control over your circumstances or the environment. And it will develop to protect you in that environment and help you deal with that environment. Then when you're an adult, you, for most parts, have control over your situation and your environment, but now you're stuck with the brain that you were given as a child. So you're still trying to cope with the circumstances of your childhood, even though you're no longer in those circumstances. And so what is happening when this malleability of the brain, this ability to change, is called plasticity, neuroplasticity. And it is what the brain is made to do. It is made to develop and change and expand. And when you're a child, this is a passive thing. We say that children are like sponges. They just absorb and they just learn. And they do that much more efficiently. When you're over 25, this process becomes different. It becomes a little bit more difficult, but you can still achieve the same form of plasticity under the right circumstances. And coming back to the sense of discomfort, one of the things that you need in order to progress is discomfort, because the brain needs a mismatch. If there isn't a mismatch between the desired state and where you are now, the brain doesn't know what to look for and what to fix.
I love that.
So you can't learn something new without having the discomfort, because then you're probably just repeating the things that you already know, the things that you're comfortable with. And the crazy thing about it is that you need to really lean into that discomfort, because when you start hitting that threshold of feeling, this is getting hard, this is getting like out of my comfort zone, I'm getting a little bit like, I don't know if I want to do this, that's the point where these changes or this priming for change is kind of kicking in. So it's what you do after that state that is actually primed into the brain. So if you then walk away, then you're priming yourself for the feeling you have there, which is miserable, or I failed, or I couldn't do it. Whilst if you lean into it and you just keep going, living in that anxiety, accepting that emotion, letting it be, and just kind of moving through it, then you're priming the brain to look for the networks that you need to build in order to achieve what you're doing. And then the actual changing of the brain, that happens during sleep. It doesn't happen during learning. And that's why learning needs to be coupled with sleep and rest, because you're priming for learning when you're doing it. And when you're asleep, when you're resting, that's when the actual changes occur.
That's amazing. So basically, the discomfort is actually a flashlight onto your growth opportunity in a way.
Yeah, it is the thing. We need a mismatch. The brain is constantly looking for problems to solve, basically. It is constantly scanning the environment for threats. It is constantly scanning the environment for triggers to, this might be dangerous, this is what you need to do to keep yourself safe. And then it's looking for a mismatch. And you can see this very clearly when you're learning a new motor skill, when you're learning to play a sport, or you're learning to play an instrument, or when children are learning to walk, that in the beginning, your movements are really crude. You're overshooting, you're undershooting, you don't have the precision that you need. And that mismatch is what is telling the brain that, hey, oh, we did overshoot here. We ended up where we were not supposed to end up. So, okay, we need to tweak this. And then it tries to tweak something. And then you do it again. And you go like, oh, we still overshoot a bit, but we're a little bit closer to the goal. So what happens when you start moving a little, you start reducing this margin of error. So you have the mismatch that is, this is where I want to be, this is where I'm at. And with training, you reduce this margin of error. And when you do that, that's when you release a neurotransmitter called dopamine. And that's the thing that gives you a feeling of reward. It gives you a feeling of, hey, something is happening here. And that can also increase your focus. And then you continuously kind of move this margin of error until you reach that goal. And now you can actually do a certain movement, or you can do a certain thing. So it's a very intricate system, but it is, the brain wants to do this. It is what it was kind of developed to do, but it becomes somewhat of a problem because it does this more efficiently in general for negative things, because it's primed to keep us safe.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that was going to be my next question. It's this idea of moving through emotion exists also in a lot of psychology and a lot of spirituality and in meditation and a lot of ideas that are not necessarily, they're correlated with neurology, but they're not necessarily tightly linked to it when we talk about it. And a lot of people struggle with that, I think, to sit through emotions. So how do we help ourselves do that? Is there a way?
I think the first important step is to know when we need professional help. Mm-hmm. Because there are certain conditions, there are certain times in your life where it might not be the healthiest thing to do. You might actually become overwhelmed and triggered too much. So if you yourself have any kind of suspicion that you might have a mental health issue, or someone around you, a loved one, is worried about you, the first step is always to seek professional help and guidance to see, hey, is there something here that I actually need to treat or manage, or that I need help to fix before I can get to this baseline of being able to doing these things that I can do on my own? So if you have significant trauma in the past, that is one kind of like flag that you need to work with this with a professional. In parallel, you can do it in parallel with doing things yourself, but you need to always have this professional help as well. So I think that's really important, and that's a point I want to make, because it sometimes falls out of this discussion when it comes to, you know, you need to change your mind, you need to increase your health, you need to do this and that, that there are certain instances when that is very, very difficult or close to impossible to do by yourself. And then you need to have that guidance. But otherwise, I think one of the reasons why it is sometimes difficult for us to sit through emotions is because of the core beliefs we have around emotions. What are emotions? Are they good and bad? Is it something I shouldn't have? Did I learn through society or through my closest and loved ones that emotions is something to be suppressed? Emotions is something that is dangerous. Emotion is something that is extremely negative in some way. It becomes very, very difficult to sit with them because there is that is like a mismatch in the brain that, hey, this is dangerous. Don't do this. Don't do this. And then to kind of sit and go through that becomes extremely difficult.
Mm. I think that's really interesting. One of the tricks that I've picked up over the years is exactly to kind of counteract that we identify with our emotions. It starts to say something about us. And it's different in different languages, but in English and also in Swedish, which is our native language, you say that you are an emotion quite often. Yeah. I am angry. Yeah. Rather than saying I feel angry, or in some languages you say you have anger, and it kind of detaches the emotion from you.
And I think is it in Irish? There is some language also where they say anger is on me.
Yeah, like, I've heard that too.
Anger is upon me. I'm not sure exactly which language it was. I think maybe it might have been Irish, like Gaelic. But I think that is such a beautiful way of seeing it. Anger is on me. It is not something that I am. It's a way of not identifying with the emotion.
Yeah.
And I mean, that certainly affects then in different societies, the way you think about how emotions are in connection to the self.
Yeah. That's a really powerful thing.
Yeah, it really is. And I think also emotional literacy comes into this, because sometimes we're not so great at knowing what emotion we are feeling. Like, you can start by going like, I feel good or I feel bad. Okay, when you feel bad, what do you feel? Well, okay, do I feel sad or do I feel anger? Okay, but then in anger, you have like several different things. You can have anger and you can have jealousy and you can have sadness, and you can have grief, and you can have so many, there are so many different variations. And if you look at this, there's a huge variation of different emotions that you can have, and being able to pinpoint a bit clearly what it is that you're actually experiencing, I think that can help also, because it means that you have a certain understanding for where this emotion comes from. And I think one of the best ways to work on being able to sit through emotions is working with self-awareness and becoming aware of what the emotion is and why I'm having it. Because if you know where it comes from, it's easier to accept and go like, hey, okay, I'm feeling stressed out now because I have some struggle with low self-esteem. I have a fear of rejection. I am in a social context. I have a core belief that I'm not worthy or that people can't like me. I am feeling anxious right now. And that's okay. It's understandable. It is what my brain kind of grew into doing. And I can work consciously with deconstructing that and building something else. But right now, I am feeling the expression of what my brain developed into.
Mm.
And feeling that understanding and that acceptance makes it easier to sit through an emotion. Because if you just feel high anxiety, what your brain is thinking is that there is a threat. There is a threat somewhere. And it's very difficult to just kind of like sit with that and go like, oh, okay, I might die. Let's just sit with this emotion that I might die. I mean, you're obviously going to try to figure out, okay, what is it that's trying to kill me? So it's very difficult to sit with it unless you know, like, okay, this emotion is not coming from an external threat. It's coming from things that I have internalized within me, and it is actually not a dangerous situation. So then you can kind of sit through the emotion in a different way.
Mm. It's like, is it true?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or even if it is true, I mean, sometimes people can actually be annoyed with you, but then that's also something to go like, okay, there is a part of me that feels highly uncomfortable with people feeling negative towards me. Okay, that's what I'm feeling right now. Let's just try to sit with that and to try to relax your body, try to maybe move the focus away for a while, maybe try to focus on your breathing or try to focus on how your the sensations in your feet or something like that. Because if you're in a very, very high state of arousal and you're very anxious, I think it's very difficult to do and it's not necessarily very healthy to do. But if you can reduce a little bit this level of stress that you have, then you can kind of like, hey, okay, what is this I'm feeling? Okay, I feel anxious. Okay, where is it located? Oh, I feel it in the bottom of my chest. Okay, but what is the feeling? Oh, it feels like something that kind of wants to expand, but there's no space, or it feels cold, or it feels whatever. And then to just sit and focus on that feeling. And this, I mean, everything has to be adapted to context. This might not be the best thing to do if you're in an important meeting. If you're in an important business meeting, or any other social situation, suppressing your emotions might actually be the best way to go. But when you are then by yourself, or when you are in a safe social situation where there is more space to explore things, then that becomes a good place to work with these things, so that the next time you are in an important meeting, you might have a little bit less emotion that you need to suppress. Mm. But everything is context driven. You need to adapt your emotional expressions to the situation you're in. But yeah, if that is the only thing you're doing, then that becomes dysfunctional. Because we know that if you only suppress emotions, that has a tendency to kind of come back and bite you in the ass. You need to also have moments where you actually sit with emotions and you might analyze them and you work with them and you work with yourself and you express to loved ones and you get support from others. You need to have that balance, but it's not something that you necessarily need to do in the situation. So you can recreate the emotion. Let's say that you are in in a conversation, you're on a phone conversation with a colleague or something, and during that conversation, you need to act in a certain way, you need to do certain things, but you feel like a heightened sense of anxiety while doing it. Later, when you're by yourself, you can sit down, you can relax, and you can kind of replay that situation in your mind, because then you're going to recreate that anxiety. So if you just go back to that phone call and you start feeling a bit anxious and you go like, okay, I'm going to dive into this. I'm going to try to like really reenact the anxiety I had during that phone call, and then just sit in that and just kind of focus on that emotion and where is it situated in my body and what is happening. Sometimes that can make things that are subconscious come up to the surface. Something that is a core belief, something that is an internalized message, will just kind of pop up out of nowhere and go like an epiphany. Ah, this is actually the reason why I'm anxious. It's not because I feel stressed out because I haven't like finished, there's this deadline and I'm too late with the deadline. I'm actually freaking out because I have this internalized belief that I don't have value as a person and that people cannot like me. So when I talk to this person, I have this underlying belief that they're probably annoyed with me. They probably don't like me, and you feel rejected. And this is what is causing the anxiety. And when you start to understand these things, then your brain can see the mismatch. And your brain needs to see the mismatch in order to know which networks to remodel into something new.
Mm. So those are important moments to like sink into that reflection and frame it for yourself so that you can help your brain focus on the reducing the gap.
And all of this is very difficult to do. I've always been fascinated by self-help and self-development and progress and how people always talk about it as if it's so easy. You just need to stop caring about other people's opinion. If people go like, yeah, of course, that's life-changing advice. Of course I shouldn't care about other people's opinion. And it makes perfect intellectual sense that you shouldn't care about other people's opinion, but somehow you still do. And I think that gets lost in the discussion. We talk a lot about, well, just think this way and then you're going to feel a certain way. But that isn't always true. Just thinking a certain way or just understanding something intellectually doesn't necessarily make us feel it.
No.
Practicing gratitude and intellectually understanding what we're grateful for doesn't necessarily create the feeling of being grateful. And I think that's where we kind of get stuck. And then sometimes I feel like this whole mental health and thriving and mindfulness, it kind of gets mixed in this hype of the hustle culture, that it just becomes another thing that you're supposed to excel at.
Mm.
That you're supposed to also be super happy and balanced and meditate. And this becomes like the new societal persona that you need to strive for. But that it's supposed to kind of be easy. And for a lot of people, it's not. And when it's presented as if this is the secret, or people talk about, well, I have this amazing life. I feel so good because I'm doing these things. You try them yourself. It doesn't work. And you feel confused. And I think we need to talk more about the fact that this is incredibly hard and everybody needs to do it in different ways. Everybody needs to figure out first, okay, what's your set point? What's your baseline? What circumstances did you go through life? What brain did you end up with? Everybody has a unique brain. Everybody has unique connections. And I mean, we have the same networks to a large extent, but we have different weights in how much different networks are connected. And what are your current life circumstances? What are your current resources? Because that differs hugely between different people. So what is the thing that is most likely to give you some benefit? For some people, that is to understand emotional literacy. For some people, that is to practice emotion regulation. For some people, it is to work on their self-esteem. For some people, it is to understand their anger and how to deal with that and where it comes from. Some people need to work with trauma. everybody has something different they need to do. And often I think we have things we need to do to even get to the point where we can start using self-help. There is like a groundwork that needs to be done before you can approach this as some form of hustle where you're just like, I'm just going to do this and I'm just going to be zen and happy and joyful and I'm going to have purpose. And if you haven't done the groundwork, you don't have a baseline you can work from. And I think that's what trips a lot of us up.
Yeah. And I like what you're saying around a lot of the times our intellectual understanding also comes before actually embodying and understanding something. Yeah, I usually see it as like this cloud of ideas that is on top of my head. And then there's like a flash that lands into my body. Okay, now I get it. Now I feel it. And not in my head, not just, you know, as an idea, but actually as a concept that I can execute, which is really interesting. But I love what you're saying also about prepping the ground for yourself. It's not just like go and dive in, hope for the best. What do you think are good ways to prime yourself for actually succeeding in your own evolution?
It comes down to self-awareness. As I said before, the first step, seek professional help. If you even have a suspicion that you might need it, check that out first. Have some structure where you get help with things that might need to be managed. And parallel with that, learn. The first step is knowledge. Understand. This is how the mind works. This is how the brain works. These are the possibilities. It's not old dogs can't learn to sit. There are, your brain actually wants to change. It can change. And you can change social emotions as well. You can train compassion. You can train empathy. All of these things you can work with. But you need to start with understanding. So you need to start with understanding the external part, that is how these things actually work. And then you need to start understanding yourself. Okay, what are my core beliefs? What are my internalized messages? Because your brain is it really wants to help. So when you're a kid or you're a young adult and 250 times a day, you get the message that I suck. Nobody likes me. And it comes half the time from someone outside that goes like, hey, you suck. Nobody likes you. And then you start telling yourself, I suck. Nobody likes me. Your brain goes like, hey, this must be a really important message because you keep repeating it. It doesn't know the difference between negative and positive. It just goes like, hey, this seems important. you keep pushing for this message. I'm going to help you with this. I'm going to automate it. I'm going to put it in the background so that you can keep using it, but you can use your focus to do other things, to learn other things, or to scan the environments for threats. So then you have this thing internalized and it just keeps running in the back of your mind. I really suck. Nobody likes me. And this is then the basis for what triggers you. So then whenever you're in a situation where this thought pattern is triggered, you're just going to feel intensely anxious or not at ease. And since it is something that is kind of in the back of your head, you might not know, you might not make that connection. You might not know that this is actually what is happening, that this is actually what is creating this emotion. We have a tendency to go like, well, I feel overwhelmed. I'm stressed out. And I mean, that's evident. I mean, I have this much to do and I have these conflicts with these people and I don't sleep and I don't eat. And yes, these external circumstances do affect your resources to deal with these things. But some of the anxiety is likely coming from within, from things that are just running in the background and it's affecting us. And in order to change that, as I said before, you need to find that mismatch. Your brain needs to see that this is what is currently happening. This is where I want to be. Hey, there's a mismatch between them. Let's reduce the margin of error. And then it's going to look for those nerve cells that are creating this mismatch. And go like, hey, you got a little loop here going around you sucking. What the heck is that? And it's going to prime that for some type of change. And that's when you can use affirmations and cognitive behavioral therapy and all of these things where you shift that message and you take that internalized belief and you shift it for a different belief. And I need all of this work needs to... needs to be done in order to be able to live life with better emotion regulation, to live life in a way where you're living intentionally, not reactively, not just reacting to everything that's happening around you as a reflex coming from all the things that you have in the back of your mind, but with an understanding of yourself and an intention of, hey, this is actually how I want to be. And I think we need to have a bit of gratitude in that, in a way, because your brain just wanted to help. It just did everything it could to keep you safe in the environment you were in. So these beliefs and these things is just there because it tried to help you, but it might not serve you anymore. It served you then because it was a coping mechanism to be able to deal with a circumstance you could not change. You were just put in it and you just had to deal with it. But as you grow, it's not serving you anymore. And that's when you need to change it and shift it into something that will serve you better. And it's even more important for coming generations. It's breaking generational trauma to shift the way that you shape your children's brains and the brains of all children around us, so that they don't have to do the same deconstructing work when they are adults.
That's really interesting. A question arises for me also around, because you talk a lot about limiting beliefs and these narratives that loop around in our head and tell us stories that impact the way we experience the world and experience ourselves. And there are, I mean, a pretty big range of different schools of help or self-help where, you know, some go deep into your history to figure out why is this narrative there and how did it come to be? And others kind of take a jump straight out of the narrative and into the improvement. How important is it for the brain to actually understand why or for us, maybe for the brain, but for ourselves, like how important is it to actually kind of go and do that layer and explore kind of why did this come to be? To be successful with this?
I think it depends entirely on the individual. We all have a different approach that we need to take. And I think this is why the learning and the knowledge and the seeking guidance and seeking help is a very important starting point, because there are so many different ways of doing this. And one way is going to be right for one person, but not for the next. So we need to be humble for the fact that there is no one fix for all. There is no quick fix. There is no one size fits all. And some people need to maybe not dig so much into the past when it comes to the intellectual part. You don't need to replay traumatic things from your past, but maybe you need to have a better connection with your body and practice this connection with your body so that you can find where these traumatic things in your past are sort of situated in your body. And that can be a way of releasing that rather than thinking about it. So sometimes we need this intellectual thinking and understanding, but sometimes we need to reach that understanding more through a felt sense. And this is entirely dependent on the person. And you just need to try different things until you find something that works for you. And if you're uncertain, find guidance. Find guidance in healthcare or with people that are consulting, with people that are kind of guiding within the area. If you're a spiritual person, maybe you're going to seek something in spirituality. There are so many different ways of doing it. And just trying something until you realize that, hey, this is a good fit. I can feel that something is happening. But then at the same time, being aware that the goal is not to not feel discomfort. You're going to feel discomfort. It's just important that it doesn't become overwhelming. Because if it's overwhelming, it's not serving you. It needs to be a bit of friction, but not chaos. Then you need to back up and you need to either do less or do it in a different way. And having this kind of self-compassion along the way and go like, hey, I am the way I am for a reason. There's nothing wrong with me. It's fine. There are things that don't serve me well. I definitely have issues. It is affecting people around me in a way that maybe I don't want it to do. This is how I would like things to be. It's going to be a struggle. It's going to be difficult. It's going to be that I take a step forward and sometimes two steps back, and I'm going to feel like a failure. It's all okay. There's nothing wrong with you. You're just trying to explore and tweak and course correct to change the life experience that you're having to something you feel is a better fit right now.
A better fit right now. I like that. It also feels more attainable.
Yeah, because it's not about like becoming this perfect person, because we tend to then do the same thing as we do with other things. I need to be successful. I need to be fit. I need to be beautiful. I need to be rich. I need to be all of these things that society is telling me is valuable. But to more look at, okay, what do I want my life experience to be? It is not about being this joyful, super happy person that is like optimistic all the time. And maybe I just want to be able to smell the roses and just be able to relax. And I don't have to be an extroverted person who's just like happily talking to everyone. No, you need to be you. You just need to be you in a way that you feel that there's a balance between how happy you feel and how not happy you feel, and that it feels like you're just surfing on that spectrum. It doesn't crush you. And that is different for everyone, and it's different for different parts of your life. You need different things in different phases of your life, and everything is always shifting, and there is no, like, the only thing we have is now. That is a very old saying, and it's very true. And we need the past and the future to be able to kind of orient ourselves and to be able to think and reflect on things, but we need to be able to live in the now, to experience the now, because we don't know for how long we're going to have it.
Mm.
And I think this individual thinking and this compassionate thinking is what we need in this discussion that we're having around human flourishing and mental health and how important these positive skills or positive emotions are for your success and for your, like, the things that you're trying to achieve in life.
Mm. I love what you're saying around kind of sinking into that, you know, it's very normal what our brains are doing. It's not anything extraordinary or bizarre, or this is just the way our brains are trying to help us get through life, and we get to have a say in how it continues when we grow up. I'm also a bit curious, because of course then, you know, we each need to look to ourselves, what we need in terms of our life and our capacity and the brains that we have and the experience that we have. And at the same time, we're often part of collectives in different structures, at work, in families. Yeah, there are loads of different collective structures that we take part in, and more or less. How can we in those help each other out? Like, how can we contribute to making that process easier for somebody else?
Well, I think part of it is when we interact with other people, there's usually a way that they make us feel. They act a certain way, they say something, and we feel negative about it. And often we believe that it's the problem is the person. This person is just bad in this and this way, and it's natural that I'm feeling upset about it. But to think that, hey, maybe my reactivity and my thought patterns around this is actually caused by something inside of me that isn't necessarily so connected to that other person. And when we do that and we take accountability for our own part in our emotions, we become more tolerant to other people, and we become more understanding as to, hey, maybe he's actually trying to be supportive, but he's doing it in a way that makes sense to him. It doesn't make sense to me, because when I hear him talk that way, it makes me feel attacked, or I feel threatened, or I feel rejected. But maybe that comes from my perspective, from my perception of how he's talking. Maybe there is something in the tone of his voice that triggers some form of memory to somebody back, way back in my past that made me feel this way. So maybe it's not actually a problem with this person. Maybe it's a maybe it's an issue that is in myself, and take accountability for that, understanding that and working with that to become less reactive in our interactions with other, because that's going to reduce the friction in all kinds of social interactions. And then to understand that it's the same for this other person. If they get super upset with me and I feel like I haven't really done anything wrong, instead of being angry with them because I think this person is so unfair to me, they're so like they don't understand anything, they're just stupid, to go like, hey, there is something in them that is triggered here, and I have no idea why that is, because I don't know what they've been through, but for some reason they feel bad when I talk like this. And then it kind of ties back to what you've been talking about before, that you need to look, fall in love with the impact instead of trying to find a solution. So then you go like, okay, what are my intentions here? Okay, my intention is actually just to inform this person or to be kind to this person or whatever it might be, and go like, okay, it's apparently not working. And it's not because my approach is completely horrible. It's because it just doesn't work with this person. It's probably going to work with someone else, but it doesn't work with this person. Let's try to figure out why. Maybe I am actually being a little bit aggressive because there's something in them that is triggering me a bit. So I'm being a little bit snappy. What can I do with that? Or maybe they are just completely misinterpreting my intentions. Let's try to figure out why that is, by being an active listener, by talking to them, by just taking a step back, just relaxing and just asking questions. Because if people feel that there's a safe space, they will talk. That is something that you learn in healthcare, that the best way to help a patient is to understand the patient. If I don't understand their experience of their disease and their life, it's very difficult to help them with it, because there are so many different reasons for why they're not going to take the medication that I'm prescribing to them. It might be because they don't understand why they should take it, but it might also be a tons of different other reasons. So you need to be able to pick up on that. So if I'm talking to them and I'm explaining something and I see that there's a shift in their body language, that there's something that happened there, I just stop and I'm just silent for a while to see if they're just going to start talking. And if they don't, I just ask, how are you thinking about what I just said? What are your thoughts right now? What is going on in your head? And then I just wait. And then if they say something, they go like, yeah, you know, I just feel like that thing was a bit unfair or something. I go like, okay, why do you think that? What is it that is unfair in it? But without being like, hey, what is unfair about that? I think it's completely normal. But just go like, hey, okay. What part is it that is unfair? Or how are you thinking about that? What does unfair mean to you? How are you thinking about this? Just keep asking open questions that is not like a yes and no answer, and just give them a safe space to actually express themselves by showing that I'm okay, you're not doing anything wrong. I can just see that you're somehow struggling with something right now, and I don't know exactly if there's anything I can do to help with that. I just want to let you know that it's okay. We all struggle. Like we're all messed up. That's just how we are, because we all have things from our backgrounds that affect our perspective and our experience. What's going on with you? And I think that's something that can help in social interactions, especially when you're trying to achieve something with someone. You're trying to get to know them, or you're trying to solve a problem with them, or you're trying to interact in like any way that is professional, to just stop and just go like, hey, how do you think about that?
I really love that. And I think it comes back to some of the keywords that you've also come back to, which is the self-awareness and compassion and empathy and being mindful in the moment. is to me exactly what you're describing here, is being very present and bringing that self-awareness and empathy into creating space, not just for yourself, but also for somebody else to be able to explore different things. And that takes a lot of courage, actually. Yeah.
It is really painful to change.
Yeah.
It really is. It is extremely painful to confront your past. It is extremely painful to realize the things you've internalized. It's extremely difficult to take those things that feel so much like the truth. Like, how can it not be true, and change that? And there is going to be a lot of friction because you have networks that are so well oiled and that have been used for so long and so much repeatedly that they don't want to change. Your brain is going to go like, hey, we already have a way of thinking about this situation. Seems to be working great. Why don't we just keep using this? We already have like a highway here. Why do you want to start building these like tiny little paths on the side? Like, it's just going to be tricky to get there. Let's use the highway.
Yeah.
So there's a resistance to change. There is going to be resistance. And I think this is why a lot of people shy away from even starting this process, because they go like, I know that I have things that it would be good to work on. I just don't want to go there because it's too painful.
Mm.
And here there needs to be this balance, like, okay, maybe it actually is too painful and you need professional guidance. But maybe it's just painful enough and it's worth the journey.
Yeah. So coming back to seeing the potential impact of actually going there, what are the benefits that we can kind of reap? I'm wondering, there's been so many good things and insights here, so many concrete things that we can do to help ourselves, to help others. But I would just still want to take this just a little moment to like wrap it up with, what's your invitation to anyone listening who, you know, wants to go more into following the flow of life and getting comfortable with that discomfort and, yeah, really finding more of that peace and joy in the now? What are some small steps that you can start with?
I think starting with really accepting and understanding the possibilities for change, that this is something that you can do. You can train compassion. You can deconstruct racism. You can deconstruct low self-esteem. You can build more empathy. You can build more a different love for yourself. You can work with all of these things. It's not impossible. And then to get curious about, okay, but then how does it work? And this is where I'm working now. I'm trying to learn about this. I'm trying to understand, what is it that is actually happening in the brain? How can we use this knowledge to actually do something to change? So I still don't know. This is why I'm excited about learning more about it. But to try to then look to, and if you're looking at self-help, look at several different ones, because there's usually some common threads in it. Everybody has their own technique. And everybody has their own like message that this is the secret. This is like the thing that's going to change everybody's life. But there are usually threads in it. And you can see some common factors. And then to find ways to work with your own self-awareness, whether that be through therapy, whether that be through just self-reflection or discussions with loved ones, or there are so many different ways you can do that. And then when you hit something that is like, okay, this is really uncomfortable. I think I want to stop here. To just go like, okay, I can take a break, I can take a pause, but I'm going to try to find a moment where I can pick this up again and I can explore it. And then move from that. And just kind of keep thinking that, okay, the things that you think are true, I mean, all of them are not. Our perspective of things, the way we see things, is completely colored by our previous experiences. the truth that you're seeing outside of you can be interpreted in many different ways. So there can actually be a world where you don't feel angry with people when they do a certain thing, because you're not going to be triggered by that behavior anymore. And it doesn't mean that you're all of a sudden like giving up and just being a doormat or letting everybody treat you any way they want. You can actually see their behavior in a different way, and it's going to affect your experience of the situation. And to just kind of keep learning, and you hit a roadblock, you just go like, okay, do I need to learn more, or do I need to ask someone, or do I need to just take a step back? Because maybe I didn't really finish the first step. Maybe I haven't really laid down all the groundwork. Maybe I need to go back to something I did before and just keep doing it for a while longer before I can move on to this next step. And then just kind of like go back and forth with that and gradually see where it takes you, but doing it with intention. As long as you have the intention, you can find a way.
I love all this. There is so much good here. I wrote down, I'm keeping a little notepad as we're talking. So just to summarize that I've understood also is, first of all, lean into the fact that you can change. It's not an impossible task at all. We're made to change.
It's an exciting task.
It's an exciting task, even more than that. Find your way with it. Don't just buy any box truth. Explore what's your way. Invest in your own self-awareness. And when the discomfort hits, lean into it and explore it. And challenge your truths. The stories that we tell ourselves, are they really true? That's another place where you can go to really reiterate your experience. And as you were saying in the end, keep going. Like, it's a journey. It's not final destination. You keep going back and forth in different pieces. That's how I at least interpreted it. But I found this really amazing.
No, I think that's a really good summary of it. And one kind of final point that we really need to remember is that privilege plays a really large part in this. So the more privilege you have, and I have almost all of them, the easier it is, the more space you have, the more resources you have to do these things. But to also be mindful both of the obstacles and the difficulties that you might have yourself that doesn't give you the space to do this work, but to realize the lack of resources and obstacles that other people have. So if you are fortunate enough to have a life where this is something you can do, then I believe that gives us also more responsibility to create a world where everybody else is given the same space. Because sometimes we go like, hey, but you know, I can see this situation as an exciting challenge instead of something stressful. But this other person is stressed out by it, so they're just not as strong as I am. No, they just don't have the same resources as you do. So the situation is stressful for that person because there is something that you have that is not like a superior personality, but that is like probably connected to resources or connected to your kind of baseline mental health and your support network that is different. So this is not something that anybody can just, all right, now I'm just going to lean into this thing. I'm just going to change. I'm just going to become balanced. I'm just going to become happy. If we have the opportunity to work with that, that is wonderful and that is great. But then along the way, or at least when we have reached a balance that makes it easier for us to live with more energy and more peace, then we have the responsibility to help others to have the space to do the same thing.
I love that. I love also that there's a role in this taking responsibility beyond yourself for this. And in particular, as you're saying, if you have the resources to do it, to extend that and help create that space for somebody else.
Especially with privilege, the fact that it is easier for me is related to the fact that it's harder for someone else. So I am getting the space that someone else is not given because my privilege is taking that space from someone else. And to be humble towards that and go like, hey, I am grateful that I get to work with this. How can I then deconstruct all of these different systems that are contributing to privilege to remove that so that everybody gets the space to work on this?
Ooh, that's a whole other podcast, just thinking about the construct of privilege. So we might have to come back to this because it's really, really interesting, I think, beyond ourselves, what happens in the collective and in the communities that we are part of, and how can we really be mindful of that also, not just self-aware, but also aware of the different contexts that we or indirectly help build. Yeah, this is a nice it's a nice cliffhanger. We'll call it a cliffhanger. We'll see how that discussion continues. I am super, super grateful for you sharing all of your amazing insight around this and feel very enriched by all of your perspectives. So thank you for your generosity and for sharing your knowledge today.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It was really a wonderful experience talking to you.
Thank you. Likewise. More good experience for the people. That's what we want from all different angles. Thank you for listening to The Experience Designers. I hope this episode brought you some new insight. A special thanks to Maria for sharing her knowledge and concrete tips to help us change and improve how we experience life. Don't forget to click subscribe. And as always, get in touch with any questions or suggestions. That's how we get better. Thank you.